A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's in the middle of a home renovation, researching a good quality drill, but he wants to talk about something most buyers completely overlook. Not the drill itself, and the type of drill you actually need for what you're drilling.
Which is exactly where the money gets wasted. You can spend $300 on a brushless hammer drill and then snap a $2 twist bit inside a piece of tile because you had the wrong mode engaged. I've seen it. I've done it.
The most expensive drill in the world is useless if you pair it with the wrong bit or the wrong setting. And most homeowners do exactly that. Strip screws, crack tile, snap bits, within the first 5 minutes of a project.
This is the moment when people are actually buying these things. Summer renovation season. The big box stores have their Father's Day leftovers marked down, the combo kits are stacked by the door, and the packaging is actively confusing people.
Family Handyman had a piece on this. They found confusion between drill types is the number one cause of ruined materials and broken bits, and yet the product packaging deliberately blurs the lines. Combi drills labeled as hammer drills when the mechanism can barely handle brick, let alone poured concrete.
Daniel's asking us to untangle exactly that. First, what's the actual difference between a regular drill, an impact driver, and a hammer drill, stripped of the marketing? Second, which drill type you use for which material, because getting that wrong is expensive. Third, how to choose the right bit for whatever you're drilling. And bit selection is a whole hidden science most people never learn. Fourth, how to store bits so they don't rust into orange powder after one season in the garage. And fifth, how to expand beyond the starter set your drill came with, because those 20-piece kits leave some pretty important gaps.
Today we'll decode the three drill types, match bits to materials, and build a storage system that keeps your tools working for years. Herman, where do we even start?
Let's start with what each tool actually does, because the names are misleading. A regular drill produces rotational force only. The chuck spins the bit cuts the material, that's it. It uses either a keyless chuck, you twist by hand to tighten, or a keyed chuck, where you use a little geared key to crank the jaws down. Regular drills are for drilling holes in wood, metal, plastic, and for driving screws if you're gentle about it.
Then there's the impact driver, which is not a drill.
An impact driver delivers rotational force plus concussive bursts, little hammer blows in the direction of rotation. It's designed for driving fasteners, screws, lag bolts, long deck screws. The mechanism kicks in when resistance increases, and it hammers the screw forward while turning it. That's why impact drivers use a hex collet instead of a chuck. You snap in quarter-inch hex shank bits, and the collet holds them. You cannot put a standard round shank twist bit in an impact driver, not without a hex adapter, and even then it's a bad idea.
The hammer drill.
Hammer drill adds axial hammering, blows that go forward into the material, not around with the rotation. Inside the drill, a cam or anvil mechanism pushes the chuck forward and back thousands of times per minute while it spins. That pulsing action pulverizes the material ahead of the bit. It's specifically for masonry, brick, concrete, stone, cinder block. The hammering shatters the material and the rotation clears the dust out of the hole.
Impact driver hammers around. Hammer drill hammers forward. Completely different physics. Completely different jobs.
This is where the marketing gets dishonest. A lot of consumer drills are sold as combi drills with a, quote, hammer drill setting. You flip a switch, and it engages a little cam mechanism that produces maybe 10 to 15,000 blows per minute. That's fine for the occasional hole in a brick wall to hang a picture. It is useless for drilling into a poured concrete foundation or anything with rebar. The cam mechanism stalls, the bit glazes over from friction, and people burn out the motor trying to force it.
They think they bought a hammer drill. They did not buy a hammer drill.
They bought a regular drill with a weak hammer mode. A real hammer drill, what's properly called an SDS rotary hammer, uses an anvil-style mechanism that produces 20 to 50,000 blows per minute. It takes SDS Plus bits, which are completely different from standard round shank bits. They slide into the chuck and lock in place, and they float slightly so the hammer mechanism can drive them forward. An SDS rotary hammer will punch a half-inch hole through 40-year-old poured concrete in about 15 seconds. A consumer combi drill on hammer mode will take 5 minutes, if it manages at all, and you'll probably destroy the bit and the tool in the process.
The packaging says hammer drill. The consumer thinks they're covered, and then they're standing in their basement with a smoking drill and a half-drilled hole, wondering what went wrong.
That's the real cost of the confusion Daniel's talking about. It's not just a terminology problem, it strips screw heads because someone used a regular drill when they needed an impact driver and the bit cammed out. It's cracked porcelain tile because someone left hammer mode on. It's snapped twist bits because someone tried to drill steel with an impact driver and the concussive rotation made the bit wander and catch.
Broken tools, ruined materials, wasted money.
Let's get into the material matching. This is where the Family Handyman Guide is genuinely useful. They lay out exactly what happens when you mismatch. Wood first, because that's what most people drill most often.
Regular drill, presumably.
But speed matters. For holes over half an inch, you want low speed, around 500 to 1000 RPM, to prevent tear out on the backside of the wood. The bit has time to cut cleanly instead of ripping through. For small pilot holes under a quarter inch, you can run at high speed, 2 to 3,000 RPM, because there's less material to clear and the bit won't grab. Brad point bits are ideal for wood because they have a sharp center spur that prevents wandering. The bit stays exactly where you place it. Standard twist bits will skate across the surface unless you make a starter divot. Regular drill only. Never engage hammer mode on metal. The axial pulses work harden the surface, which means the metal gets tougher the more you pound on it, and your bit just skates and overheats. For metal, slow speed is non-negotiable. 300 to 500 RPM for holes over a quarter inch in steel. And you need cutting oil. Not WD-40, not motor oil. Actual cutting oil, which is formulated to cool the bit and carry heat away from the cutting edge. Without it, a standard HSS bit drilling into a half-inch steel beam will overheat and anneal in about 10 seconds. Annealing means the bit loses its hardness, the cutting edge goes soft, and it's done. With cobalt bits at 500 RPM and cutting oil, the same hole takes 30 seconds and the bit is fine.
Annealing a bit in 10 seconds. That's a fast way to turn a good tool into a paperweight.
It's one of those things you don't realize until you've done it. The bit stops cutting, you push harder, the drill motor whines, and then you smell hot metal. Cobalt HSS bits, that's high-speed steel with 8% cobalt, are what you want for stainless steel and hardened metals. Popular Mechanics tested this. Cobalt bits outperform titanium nitride coated bits on hard metals because the TN coating reduces friction but doesn't increase hardness. The cobalt alloy is harder all the way through. The coating wears off eventually, the cobalt doesn't.
The gold-colored bits aren't automatically better.
That's one of the big misconceptions. Titanium nitride looks impressive. It's that shiny gold finish, and it does reduce friction, which is great for production drilling where you're doing hundreds of holes and want the bit to last longer. But it doesn't make the underlying steel any harder. On stainless steel or hardened bolts, a tin-coated bit will dull just as fast as uncoated HSS once the coating wears through at the cutting edge. Cobalt bits cost more, but they're the right tool for hard metal, period.
This is where the hammer drill earns its keep.
Hammer drill required. Carbide tip bits required. The carbide is brazed onto a steel shank, and it's the carbide that does the cutting. It's extremely hard but brittle, which is why you never use carbide tip masonry bits on wood or metal. The carbide chips and the bit is ruined. For brick and cinder block, a consumer combi drill on hammer mode with a carbide tip bit works fine. The material is relatively soft and the cam mechanism can handle it. For poured concrete, especially if it's older than about 20 years, you need an SDS rotary hammer. Older concrete is harder. It's had decades to cure fully, and the aggregate inside is like granite. A consumer combi drill will stall. The bit will glaze over. That's when friction heats the carbide tip and it essentially polishes smooth instead of cutting. You end up with a shiny, useless bit and a hole that's maybe an eighth of an inch deep.
If you hit rebar.
Carbide masonry bits are not designed to cut steel rebar. You'll destroy the bit. You need to either relocate the hole or switch to a rebar cutting bit, which is a specialty item most homeowners don't own. An SDS rotary hammer with the right bit can sometimes punch through small rebar, but is not guaranteed and it's rough on the tool.
Tile and glass.
Regular drill on the lowest speed setting. Hammer action must be off. If you leave hammer mode on while drilling tile, the axial pulses will crack the tile before the bit even penetrates. For ceramic tile, you want a spearpoint carbide bit. For porcelain and glass, diamond-tipped bits. Porcelain is much harder than ceramic and will destroy a standard carbide bit. The technique is to start at a 45-degree angle to create a small notch, then slowly tilt the drill to 90 degrees once the bit has purchased. Keep the speed low, use water as a coolant if you're drilling multiple holes, and let the bit do the work, no pressure. Pushing hard on tile is how you crack it.
Impact drivers on drilling. You said it's a bad idea.
Impact drivers are designed for driving fasteners. The concussive rotation is great for breaking a stuck screw free or sinking a long lag bolt without stripping the head. It is terrible for drilling clean holes. First, the hex collet limits you to quarter-inch hex shank bits. You can't use standard twist bits without an adapter, and the adapter introduces wobble. Second, the impact mechanism causes the bit to wander. The rotational hammering makes the bit jump slightly with each blow, so you get an oversized or oval hole instead of a clean circle. Third, twist bits are designed for impact forces. The concussive rotation can snap them, especially smaller diameters. If you need to drill a hole, use a drill. If you need to drive a screw, use an impact driver. They're complementary tools, not interchangeable.
That seems like the core of Daniel's question, really. These tools look similar, they're often sold together, and the names suggest overlap that doesn't exist.
And the chuck type is another layer people don't think about until it matters. Keyless chucks are convenient. You twist by hand, quick bit changes, no tool to lose. But they slip under high torque, especially if the bit is dull and you're pushing hard. If you're drilling a half-inch hole in steel, a keyless chuck might not grip tightly enough, and the bit will spin in the chuck, scoring the shank and ruining both the bit and the chuck jaws. For metal drilling, especially holes over half an inch, a keyed chuck is strongly recommended. The geared key lets you apply much more clamping force and the bit won't slip. The trade-off is speed. Changing bits takes longer. For most homeowners doing mixed work, a good quality keyless chuck is fine, but you need to tighten it firmly on all three jaws. A lot of people just give it a quick twist and wonder why the bit spins.
Tighten on all three jaws. That's the kind of detail that doesn't make it onto the packaging.
The packaging wants you to buy the tool, not necessarily understand it. And that brings us to the bit side of things, which is where we should go next, because choosing the right drill is only half the equation. The other half is choosing the right bit and keeping it in usable condition.
Daniel's seen bits rust from outdoor storage, so he's asking whether they should always be kept inside. Short answer is yes, but there's a whole system behind why and how.
Let's get into that. If we strip away the marketing, which is half the battle with power tools, you've really got three completely different machines that happen to share a pistol grip shape. A regular drill spins a bit. That's its entire job. Rotational force only, delivered through a chuck that grips round shank bits. Keyless if you want speed, keyed if you need clamping force that won't slip under heavy load.
Then the impact driver, which the packaging often shows next to a drill like their siblings. They're not.
They're not even the same species. An impact driver delivers rotational force plus concussive bursts, little hammer blows in the direction of rotation, not forward into the material. The mechanism kicks in when resistance increases, and it hammers the fastener around while turning it. That's why it uses a hex collet instead of a chuck. You snap in quarter-inch hex shank bits, and the collet holds them. Its purpose, built for driving screws, lag bolts, deck fasteners. It is not a drilling tool.
The hammer drill hammers forward, into the material.
A hammer drill adds a cam or anvil mechanism that pulses the chuck forward and back thousands of times per minute while it spins. That axial hammering pulverizes masonry ahead of the bit, and the rotation clears the dust. It's for brick, concrete, stone, cinder block. The physics are completely different from an impact driver. One hammers around, the other hammers forward, and yet the names sound interchangeable.
Impact driver, hammer drill. To a first-time buyer at a big box store, that's the same adjective applied to two different nouns. Why wouldn't they assume overlap?
The manufacturers don't exactly rush to correct that assumption. Family Handyman called this out directly. Impact drivers and hammer drills solve fundamentally different problems, but the marketing deliberately blurs the lines. The worst offender is the combi drill. It's a regular drill with a little switch that engages a weak cam mechanism, and the box says hammer drill in bold letters.
The consumer thinks they bought a hammer drill. They bought a regular drill with a party trick.
A party trick that produces maybe 10 to 15,000 blows per minute, fine for the occasional hole in soft brick to hang a picture. It is useless for poured concrete, especially if that concrete is more than 20 years old and has cured to something approaching granite. The cam mechanism stalls. The carbide tip on the bit glazes over from friction, essentially polishes itself smooth instead of cutting. And the user, not knowing any of this, just pushes harder until the motor burns out.
The real hammer drill, the SDS rotary hammer, is a completely different animal.
Anvil-style mechanism, 20 to 50,000 blows per minute, takes SDS plus bits that slide into the chuck and float slightly so the hammer action can drive them forward. It'll punch a half-inch hole through 40-year-old poured concrete in about 15 seconds. The consumer combi drill on, quote, hammer mode will take 5 minutes if it manages at all, and you'll destroy the bit and possibly the tool in the process.
That's the real cost of the confusion Daniel's pointing at. It's not a terminology quibble. It's strip screw heads because someone drove a 3-inch deck screw with a regular drill and the bit cammed out. It's cracked porcelain tile because hammer mode was left on. It's snap twist bits because someone tried to drill steel with an impact driver, and the concussive rotation made the bit wander and catch.
It's $150 wasted on a combi drill that was supposed to handle everything, when what the person actually needed was a basic cordless drill plus a separate SDS rotary hammer rental for the 1 weekend they were anchoring into a foundation. The packaging sold them a Swiss Army knife. The job needed a chef's knife and a chisel.
Which brings us to the next layer. Once you know which drill to use, you still have to pick the right bit for the material in front of you, and that's where Daniel's second question lives.
Let's walk through material by material, because the consequences of getting it wrong range from annoying to expensive to dangerous. Wood first. It's the most forgiving, but there are still ways to mess it up.
Tear out on the backside. The bit punches through instead of cutting through.
That's the big one. For holes over half an inch, drop the speed, around 500 to 1,000 RPM. The bit has time to shear the wood fibers cleanly instead of blasting through and blowing out a splintered crater on the exit side. For small pilot holes under a quarter inch, you can run fast, 2 to 3,000 RPM, because there's less material to clear and the bit won't grab. And this is where bit geometry matters. Bradpoint bits have a sharp center spur that bites into the wood exactly where you place it. A standard twist bit on wood will skate, especially on finished surfaces. You need a starter divot or a center punch mark.
Metal is where people really cove their bits.
Regular drill only. Never engage hammer mode on metal. The axial pulses don't cut, they peen. They work hard on the surface, which means the metal actually gets tougher the more you pound on it, and your bit just skates and overheats. Speed is everything. For holes over a quarter inch in steel, 300 to 500 RPM. And you need cutting oil, not WD-40, not 3-in-1, actual cutting oil formulated to carry heat away from the cutting edge.
What happens without it?
Let me give you the specific scenario. You're drilling a half-inch hole in a steel beam with a standard HSS bit at high speed, say 2,000 RPM, which is what a lot of drills default to on the high setting. Within about 10 seconds, the friction at the cutting edge generates enough heat to anneal the bit. Annealing means the steel loses its temper, the hardness is gone. The cutting edge goes soft, the bit stops cutting, you push harder, the motor whines, and you smell hot metal. The bit is now a paperweight.
That's all it takes.
10 seconds from a sharp bit to scrap. Now same hole, same steel beam, but you switch to a cobalt HSS bit, that's high-speed steel with 8% cobalt, run it at 500 RPM, and keep cutting oil on the contact point. The hole takes about 30 seconds. The bit stays cool enough to touch, and it's ready for the next hole. Popular Mechanics tested this directly. Cobalt bits outperform titanium nitride coated bits on hard metals because the cobalt is alloyed through the entire bit, not just coated on the surface. Tin reduces friction, which is great for production drilling where you're doing hundreds of holes and want the coating to extend life, but it doesn't make the underlying steel any harder. On stainless or hardened bolts, once that gold coating wears through at the cutting edge, and it will, the bit dulls just as fast as uncoated HSS.
The gold bits aren't automatically better. That's going to annoy a lot of people who paid extra for the shiny.
The packaging loves that gold finish. It looks premium. But metallurgically, cobalt is the upgrade that matters for hard metal. Pay for the alloy, not the paint job.
This is where people discover their combi drill has limits.
Masonry is a completely different drilling action. You're not cutting, you're pulverizing. A carbide-tipped bit in a hammer drill doesn't slice through brick or concrete. It pounds it into dust, and the flutes carry the dust out. The carbide is brazed onto a steel shank, and it's extremely hard but brittle. That brittleness is why you never use carbide-tipped masonry bits on wood or metal. The carbide chips and the bit is ruined instantly.
The hammer mechanism is doing the actual work. The rotation is just clearing debris.
For soft brick and cinder block, a consumer combi drill on hammer mode with a carbide-tipped bit works fine. Those cam action mechanisms produce 10 to 20,000 blows per minute, and the material is soft enough that the relatively weak hammering can still fracture it. But poured concrete, especially older concrete, is a different beast. Concrete continues curing for decades. 40-year-old poured concrete has an aggregate inside that's essentially granite, and the cam mechanism in a consumer drill simply doesn't hit hard enough. The bit bounces instead of penetrating. Friction builds, the carbide tip glazes over, it polishes smooth, and you end up with a shiny, useless bit and a hole, maybe an eighth of an inch deep.
If you keep going...
The motor overheats and burns out. I've watched someone destroy a $150 drill trying to hang a single shelf bracket in a basement foundation. What they needed was an SDS rotary hammer. Anvil-style mechanism, 20 to 50,000 blows per minute, and it takes SDS plus bits that slide into the chuck and float. The hammer piston actually strikes the back of the bit directly. That tool drills the same half-inch hole in 15 seconds, the bit is fine, and you move on with your life.
The rule is, brick and block, combi drill might handle it. Poured concrete, especially old poured concrete, you need the real thing.
If you hit rebar, stop immediately. Carbide masonry bits are not designed to cut steel reinforcing bar. You'll destroy the bit, and the SDS hammer will just pound it into the rebar without cutting through. You either relocate the hole or switch to a specialty rebar cutting bit, which most homeowners don't own and shouldn't need to buy for one project.
Tile and glass. This is where hammer mode becomes actively destructive.
Hammer mode must be off. If you leave it on while drilling ceramic tile, the axial pulses will crack the tile before the bit even penetrates, sometimes before it even scratches the glaze. You want a regular drill on the lowest speed setting. For ceramic tile, a spearpoint carbide bit. For porcelain and glass, diamond tip bits. Porcelain is much harder than ceramic and will destroy a standard carbide bit within seconds.
The technique matters too, right? You can't just center punch tile.
Start at a 45 degree angle to create a small notch in the glaze, then slowly tilt the drill to 90 degrees once the bit has purchase. Keep the speed low, use water as a coolant if you're drilling multiple holes. It keeps the bit from overheating and the tile from thermal shocking, and let the bit do the work. Pushing hard on tile is exactly how you crack it, and then you're replacing tiles instead of drilling holes.
Every one of these material mismatches has the same shape. The tool feels like it's not working, so you push harder, and pushing harder is what breaks things.
That's the instinct you have to override. Drilling isn't about force, it's about matching the speed, the bit, and the mechanism to the material. When you feel resistance, the answer is almost never more pressure. It's slower speed, cutting oil, or a different bit.
Then there's the impact driver, which some people try to use as a drill because it came in the combo kit, and it looks like it should work.
It doesn't. Impact drivers deliver rotational impacts, concussive bursts in the direction of rotation, designed to break stuck fasteners free and drive long screws without stripping the head. The hex collet limits you to quarter-inch hex shank bits, and the impact mechanism makes the bit jump with each blow, giving you an oversized or oval hole. Twist bits aren't designed for those impact forces and can snap, especially smaller diameters. If you need to drill a hole, use a drill. If you need to drive a screw, use an impact driver.
Which brings us to the bits themselves. Daniel's third question is about choosing the right bit for the material. And honestly, most people just grab whatever twist bit is closest to the right size and hope for the best.
Twist bits are general purpose. They'll cut wood, plastic, soft metal. But they wander. On wood especially, the point geometry doesn't center itself, so the bit skates across the surface before it bites. On metal, you solve this with a center punch. A small, hardened steel punch you tap with a hammer to create a divot that catches the bit tip. Without that divot, the bit walks, and your hole ends up a 1/16 of an inch off. Which doesn't sound like much until you're mounting a hinge and the door hangs crooked.
For wood, Brad, point bits.
Brad point bits have a sharp center spur that bites into the wood exactly where you place it. The outer spurs score the perimeter of the hole before the cutting edges remove material, so you get a clean entry with no tear out. If you're drilling shelf pin holes or dowel holes in furniture, brad point is non-negotiable. A twist bit will leave you with a fuzzy, slightly oversized hole that a dowel rattles around in.
Then there's the spade bit, which looks like a flat paddle with a point. Those are for rough work.
Spade bits are for quick, large diameter holes in framing lumber, running wire through studs, that kind of thing. They're cheap, they're fast, and they tear out the back side of the hole like crazy. You don't use a spade bit on anything visible. For that, you use a Forstner bit.
This is the one that looks like a small cylinder with a circular rim and a center point.
Forstner bits cut flat-bottomed holes with perfectly clean sides. They're essential for cabinet hinges and door hardware. The flat bottom means the hinge cup sits flush, and the clean edge means no splintering around the visible portion of the hole. This old house calls them out specifically for fine woodworking. The catch is they require a drill press or a very steady hand. On a hand drill, a Forstner bit can grab and twist the drill right out of your grip if you're not braced.
Hole saws. Those are the cup-shaped ones with teeth around the rim.
For large diameter holes through wood, drywall, or thin metal. Doorknob installations, recessed lights in a drywall ceiling, running pipe through a cabinet. Always use the pilot bit first, the center drill bit that comes with the hole saw, because it keeps the saw from wandering. Without the pilot, the hole saw will skate across the surface and leave a scar you can't fix.
These look like little metal Christmas trees.
Step bits are brilliant for thin material. Each step is a larger diameter, so one bit drills multiple hole sizes. They're designed for sheet metal, electrical boxes, plastic enclosures, anything under about 1/8 of an inch thick. You drill until the step you want clears the material, and you stop. No bit changes, no walking, and the hole is perfectly round. Electricians live by step bits. For a homeowner doing any electrical work, running conduit, installing a new breaker box knockout, a step bit saves an enormous amount of frustration.
Geometry is half the bit story. The other half is what the bit is made of.
This is where Popular Mechanics really did the homework. HSS, high-speed steel, is the baseline. Good for wood, plastic, soft metals like aluminum and mild steel. It's what's in most starter sets. But the moment you touch stainless steel or anything hardened, HSS is outmatched. The cutting edge dulls almost immediately. Cobalt HSS is high-speed steel alloyed with 8% cobalt. The cobalt makes the steel harder and more heat-resistant all the way through. It's not a coating, it's in the alloy. Popular Mechanics confirmed cobalt bits outperform titanium nitride, coated bits on hard metal specifically because tie-in is just a surface treatment. It reduces friction, which is useful for production work. Hundreds of holes in mild steel, the coating extends bit life. But on stainless or hardened bolts, the cutting edge wears through that gold coating fast, and underneath it's just regular HSS. Cobalt doesn't have that problem because the hardness goes all the way through.
The gold bits are the tool equivalent of a shiny paint job on a base model engine.
That's exactly what they are, and the packaging leans into it hard because gold looks premium. But if you're drilling stainless steel, say you're mounting a grab bar in a bathroom with stainless brackets, pay for cobalt, not the color.
Carbidated bits we covered. Masonry only. Brittle. Never on wood or metal.
The carbide is brazed onto a steel shank. It's extremely hard, which is why it can pulverize brick and concrete, but that hardness comes with brittleness. Run a carbide-tipped masonry bit into wood, and the cutting edge chips because wood is fibrous and grabs. The carbide can't flex, so it fractures.
Then there's the storage question. Daniel's seen bits rust in outdoor storage. He's asking if they should always be kept inside.
The short answer is yes, and the long answer is that humidity is the enemy. Pro Tool Reviews did a deep dive on this. The number one cause of bit rust isn't rain or direct water, it's condensation from temperature swings. You leave a set of bits in an unconditioned garage, the temperature drops at night, moisture condenses on the cold steel, and you've got rust by morning. Open wall-mounted magnetic strips look great in workshop photos, but they're one of the worst storage methods because the bits are fully exposed to whatever the air is doing.
The magnetic strip on the garage wall, the one that looks so organized in the Instagram workshop shots, is actually destroying the bits.
Within months, especially in a humid climate, the bits rust at the cutting edges first, because that's where the steel is thinnest and most vulnerable. Once the cutting edge is pitted, the bit is done. You can't sharpen a rust, pitted twist, bit back to usefulness.
What's the right way?
The ideal is a sealed case with a desiccant pack stored inside the house, not the garage, not the shed, a climate-controlled interior space. Silica gel packets absorb up to 40% of their weight in moisture, and they're cheap. You can buy 100 pack for a few dollars. The trick is, they need to be recharged. Every 3 to 6 months in a humid climate, bake them at 250 degrees Fahrenheit for 2 hours. That drives the absorbed moisture out, and they're good to go again.
Bake the little packets. That's going to surprise people.
It sounds weird, but it works. The silica doesn't degrade. You can recharge those packets indefinitely. The alternative is replacing them, but baking is free and takes almost no effort.
What's the ranking?
Number 1. Original plastic cases with foam inserts and a desiccant pack. The foam holds each bit in place so they're not banging against each other, which dulls the cutting edges. Number 2, a waterproof case with a rubber gasket like the kind sold for storing ammunition or electronics plus silica gel. Number 3, a drawer with a desiccant, but only if the drawer is inside the house. Number 4, the magnetic wall strip, which is the worst option for bit longevity despite being the most photogenic.
We've covered the drill types, the material matching, the bit geometry, the metallurgy, and how to not let your bits rust into orange dust. That's a lot of ground. Let's pull it into something you can actually use. Standing in the hardware store aisle, staring at a wall of options, and trying not to make a $100 mistake. Daniel's really asking for a decision framework here. Something that cuts through the packaging noise.
Here's the flowchart. 3 questions, in order. 1. What material am I drilling? That tells you which drill type you need and whether hammer mode stays off. 2. What hole size? That determines your RPM range and whether you need a pilot hole first. 3. What finish quality? That tells you whether you grab the brad point bit or the spade bit, the Forstner or the twist.
Material, size, finish. 3 data points, and you've eliminated about 80% of the wrong choices before you even touch a tool.
The answers cascade. Material is wood, hole is under a quarter inch, finish doesn't matter because it's hidden framing. Grab a standard twist bit, run it fast, done. Material is wood, hole is 35 millimeters, finish matters because it's a cabinet hinge, Forstner bit, slow speed, steady hand. Material is stainless steel, hole is 3/8, cobalt bit, 500 RPM, cutting oil, keyed chuck if you have one.
If the material is 40-year-old poured concrete, the flowchart spits out Renton SDS rotary hammer. Don't even try the combi drill.
The flowchart's real value is telling you when to stop and get the right tool instead of burning up the wrong one.
That's the decision framework. But Daniel also asked about what to actually own. What's the minimum viable bit collection that won't leave you stranded mid-project?
I call this the 3-bit rule. Every homeowner should own 3 core sets. First, a good HSS twist bit set covering 1/16th to half an inch. That handles wood, plastic, soft metal, pilot holes, and about 90% of the holes you'll ever drill. Don't buy the cheapest set. The tolerances are sloppy and the bits dull after 3 holes. Spend maybe $25 to $35 on a reputable brand. A carbide-tipped masonry bit set, 3/16 to 3/8 of an inch. Those 3 sizes cover plastic wall anchors, Tapcon concrete screws, and most masonry fasteners a homeowner will encounter. You don't need a 20-piece masonry set. 3 bits will do it, but they must be carbide tipped. Cheap masonry bits without carbide are just twist bits with a different flute geometry, and they'll be useless after 1 hole in brick.
The 3rd set isn't for drilling at all.
An impact rated screwdriver bit set with a magnetic holder. Number 2, Phillips number 2 square drive, a few torque sizes, and a couple of flatheads for good measure. Impact rated means the bit shank is designed to flex slightly under the concussive load instead of shattering. Regular screwdriver bits in an impact driver will snap, sometimes on the first screw. The magnetic holder is non-negotiable because it keeps the screw on the bit while you position it one-handed.
HSS twist bits, carbide masonry bits, impact-rated driver bits. Everything else, the Forstners, the step bits, the hole saws, the long installer bits, those are buy as you need them.
That's exactly how you should approach expansion beyond the starter set. Daniel asked what situations call for going beyond the initial collection. The answer is when you hit a specific project that the basic set can't handle. You're installing cabinet doors. You need a 35mm Forstner bit. You're running electrical and drilling knockouts in a metal breaker box. You need a step bit. You're mounting a TV on a wall with metal stud.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.